Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Mike Peskin for Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Sometime in the near future, maybe the far future, things will have to be explained. We'll have to answer what was money and how did interest work? Hey, why did people work? And when they did work, why did they arrange their desks in a U-shape or an I-shape? And what did residents on the outer rim of the U-shape say about their status? This is all considered in Corey Seeker's new book, his first novel, Very Recent History, an entirely factual account of a year circa AD 2009 in a large city. So specifically, Corey Seeker, whose name is mentioned on the book, you are specifically here, but everything other than that is pretty vague, like what's the city and what's the year and how recent is the history. But hi, Corey, how
are
you doing?
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
The concept here is like, let's look back and let's consider some of the weird things that we might not know are weird. That's what you get when you say, hey, and this was money and this was why people lived in apartments. But how'd that idea come to you?
Well, I don't know how well you remember 2009 at this point. Mm-hmm. I personally blacked out most of it myself, you know. But, you know, when you look back, it was so strange. What was happening in there was really weird. People were just being tossed out of their jobs. People were filling up their boxes and their desks, all that jazz. And then we all, you know what they say about when you have a baby, when you go through childbirth, that like the only reason you have another kid is that you blank that out.
Right. And also on the other end, there's something called infantile amnesia, which the babies don't know about until, like, you don't really start remembering things until you're three.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
So I think that happened to a lot of us, too. So when we were writing this, we were like, we need to find a way to bring it back. Let's have PTSD together.
Yeah. And also, you know, by noting things which we just take as a fact of life, like the oxygen of this city, it is true. And until you write it so starkly early on, this is a city of many million people. The richest of them was the mayor of the city. Like, that's true. And it doesn't seem like something to remark upon until you put it like that. It's like, yeah, that is kind of weird, isn't it?
It's very weird that we've had this guy as mayor for so long and are now about to have someone else. Are you worried about this election?
It's either going to be his hand-picked handmaiden there, or it's going to be some, you know, sexter, or it's going to be some kind of serious guy who can't get a soundbite to save his life. These are our choices.
This is a rough field. I'm not a big Bloomberg fan, and I'm sort of like, well, you know what? He actually gets the job done. You know what? I'm sort of like, I'm getting warm for him again already somehow.
The Bloomberg in the book, one of the through lines is how Bloomberg gave himself a third term and he was voted into a third term. And we have all seemed to have forgot about this, and it's, you know, not at all scandalous except to a couple of callers on the show, you know, every once in a while. But that was kind of remarkable when you think about it, although perhaps less remarkable than everything going on in 2009.
It was very weird. They just did this. They really did. And we all thought, hey, no, we don't want. Oh, OK, well, that's done. You know, it happened real fast. And, you know, the other thing that's really notable about the years of Bloomberg is just how much money he put into the city himself.
Yeah.
And so the weird thing that's happening now is that people who work in City Hall, so there's a Valhalla at City Hall, which is the Bloomberg Foundation, right? Mm-hmm. So if you do a great job in service, and then you get to go on and work at this ritzy foundation, which was why a lot of people downtown were really opposed to a third term, because they were ready to retire onto this. And now it looks like that's not going to happen, because apparently Bloomberg just wants to move to London and be done with us, which is a little weird, too.
And even in the book, towards the very end, you... And let me stop and say, there's a lot more to the book than politics. There's a lot of interpersonal relationships, but this just – it struck me as a good observation. The end of the book, you know, you kind of posit what did – or one of your characters asks, what did he really do? I mean, what power did he really have? It seems like his power was whispering and influence and, yeah, he rezoned some stuff. But what was the power?
Right. I mean, mayors, except for budgets and a couple of things, don't do a lot of things. You know, that's why when we talk about Bloomberg, what do we talk about? We talk about, you know, soda ban and whatnot. That's not – what is that? That's not so much. But what did happen, what they did allow was for New York City to achieve an amazing underclass, an entrenched permanent underclass, which includes basically almost all black men in New York City, which includes a lot of young people. And what happened over 12 years was that just got solidified. That is a done deal. And it's a shame about New York City, honestly.
Corey Seeker, the former editor of Gawker, found a couple times you did that, right?
Twice, yeah.
Founder, did it get better every time?
It's like when you remarry someone, it doesn't often work out.
Yeah, right. What is the, it's the triumph of hope over experience. Founder of The All and... now author of the new book, Very Recent History, an entirely factual account of the year AD 2009 in a large city. The city is ours. I'm going to reveal that.
Spoiler.
Yeah. So you really did want to write about 2009. During 2009, did you say this must be written about, or was it years later?
I think mostly during 2009, I was too busy getting evicted.
Yeah.
Like most of us.
So the main character in this book is a guy named John. There's a lot of – he's the main character, I would say.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And John works at a company, the product of which is never named, but I think everyone reading the book said, yeah, it's the New York Observer.
People can read however they want. You know, people don't really worry about nonfiction. You know, people didn't go to Random Family and be like, let's go find these people.
Right.
So these are people who work at different firms, some of whom work for themselves, a couple of whom are tutors. Mm-hmm. There's a lawyer in there in the mix somewhere. But what they all have in common is a ton of debt. And what happens to people that I think most of us probably know who are in their 20s, who've achieved this debt and are then out in the workforce making $30,000 a year, something like that, is it's paralyzing and they panic and they give up. And often they stop paying that debt.
Yeah.
Which is really easy at first, right?
Right. So the effect of debt on characters who are also having their love lives and their professional lives. You know, some people, there are authors out there who write about the effects of economics on the individual, nonfiction writers. You know, someone will go and work for a waitress as a year, and then that's the story. Not too many novels will take this as, you know, the main subject. We'll take not only the Bloomberg reelection, but the kind of crushing economics of the reality of a young person who has graduated from college and is struggling with their debt.
It does sound like sort of a downer when you put it like that.
Well, I mean, it could get in the way of drama and conflict. You know, you have long passages of essentially accounting.
Yeah, no, it's true. Well, then that's the thing. You know, one of the characters in the book has, you know, he does something that I do, too, which is actually the part I liked about the book was seeing what horrible things I do about money. Is he just stuffs everything in a drawer. So he has this like overflowing desk of like bills and late statements. And you know what? You get inured to it, right? Mm-hmm. Like you get that third notice and you're like, well, they didn't shut off my electric yet. So I guess I'm fine. You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to put you in jail.
Yeah, yeah. Or dentist jail if you don't pay dentist for getting jail. Your teeth capped after you drunkenly fall down on a sidewalk, which is what happened to one of the guys.
It does get real after a while. I had my own IRS case manager for a while. Uh-huh. You know, they do eventually come get serious about these things.
Although the government furlough is maybe your friend in that respect, fewer case managers to help you.
Smaller government. There you go.
Talking with Corey Seeker. You know, if you want to look for his book on Amazon and you're spelling Corey the wrong way, he spells it C-H-O-I-R-E. How much has the spelling of Corey affected your life?
Significantly. You know, did you see that woman on English TV the other day who was railing about lower class names? This is an amazing clip that went everywhere.
Yeah.
And I really thought, like, wow. I mean, A, she's a terrible human being.
Yeah.
But B, you know, there's some of us, it's like, do these weird names, like people like me, have connote class? Or do they connote whatever, something else? Do you know what I mean?
Like, it depends who you are having the name, right? So if you were born into an upper crusty family with that name, that means something. And if you were born in a trailer park, that means they don't know how to spell.
Right. Exactly. I wish my name was like Chip or something.
Uh-huh. Like, or Chad, which is one of the guys in your book. Chad's a good name.
It's a good name.
It's a lot of one-syllable names. And you have none of the characters have really crazy names, right? Diego, Chad, John, Jason.
That's a good point. No,
Sally.
They don't. Yeah. Wow, that's a really good point. And the ones that got changed, their names weren't too crazy either. I tried to have reflective name changes.
What does that mean?
Well, you know, not to take something like, not to name someone who's like Sam, and I don't want to turn them into an Esmeralda.
Yes. So how much reflecting was done in the book? How much is the book modeled? This is what people want to know, but I don't really want to know that much, but I'll ask you a question off it. So how real is the book?
Oh, it's 1,000% real. So I can tell you, let's see. Yeah, no, there's nothing that's not real. There's no composite characters. There's no... There's no obfuscation. The only lies are, as they say, are of omission. So it's only things that weren't included. So we didn't all the dialogue is 100% real. Everything's real.
So every character in the book represents someone real in life.
Oh, yes.
Every relationship in the book represents a relationship that person had.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So did any of these people get mad at you since the book has come out?
You know, so we had an interesting process. So, you know, I had a really hard time writing the book, and then I kind of appeared with a draft, and I thought, hey, well, now it's time for these people to read it,
mm-hmm.
Which I don't – it was probably more awkward for me than for them. I don't know. And you know what? They read it, and they all – they had very few notes, very few changes. The one thing they all wanted was to be nicer to each other in the book. They were like, wow, that was really mean, that thing I said. And can we soften that? And I was like, you know what? Let's take it out. That's absolutely no problem. These are people under great stress.
But are you doing a favor for them? You're holding up a mirror to them and you're saying, actually, you were mean. Did anyone say, wow, did I really come across like that? They must have.
Yeah, no. This is the thing. And also, it's funny when a couple years passed, if people came to you and was like, here's a lot that happened to you, you're going to be like, I don't remember any of that.
Right. So how did you do it? Did you construct it from your memory? Were you taking notes at the time?
Oh, yeah. No, I have recordings of the whole thing. Yeah. No, it's all there. It's interesting. You know, it's very – I would not like to be written about.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's safe to say.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I think it comes across. I think people really like these people in the book, and I'm glad. I'm extremely fond of them. Like, I think they're really wonderful. They're witty. They're funny. They were trying things out. They were doing, like, the best they could in the situation and even better than that. You know, they're great. They're awesome people.
So my question off of that, I think that someone, you know, hosting a new show should say, why weren't you brave or honest or something enough to just write a flat-out memoir? I don't have that question. My question is almost like, why would anyone write a memoir? Unless they're Keith Richards. Like, why – could you imagine what your life would be if you just used every accurate name? It would be horrible right now.
Right. No, and I'm not a big fan of memoirs. I hope never to write one. Because you know what? Except for David Carr. Do you remember David Carr's Night of the Gun?
Yeah.
So what he did for that, if you don't remember, is he went and re-reported parts of his life and found out how wrong he was about stories. Like,
right.
He had told this one story about someone coming in with a gun, and everyone was like, dude, that was you. Like, you're that guy. And so, you know, that actually just really kind of undermined memoir for me more and more. People don't remember. I don't remember my past. No one does. So, yeah.
My last question, really an observation. So in this book, as I, you know, stated in the introduction, there are long passages where it's told in the future and you say, you know, back then there were thick slabs of poor, lonely, and hopeless left behind people.
Dramatic.
There were glass plate houses and high compressed stacks. You define everything that we take for granted, from apartments to money. But you never really question emotions. Like, emotions never have to be defined. You never said love, which was a feeling of X, Y, and Z. Did you know you did that? And what do you make of that?
You are a very insightful reader. Did you know that about yourself?
What would my name be in the memoir of this of 2013?
Oh, we don't have to write about 2013. This year doesn't exist. You know, it's funny. I just never thought that over time, I don't think people are going to change. I don't think people have changed in thousands of years, essentially, which is nice in some ways. But I do think the structures we live in have changed so much and will continue to change. I mean, we won't get into climate change, but what's New York City going to look like in 100 years is a really valid question.
Yes. And many others are raised in very recent history. An entirely factual account of a year. I keep saying year. Year circa AD 2009 in a large city. Corey Sika, thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks.
Calling all dads, calling all moms in a moment. Stay with us.